Linoleum Knife,
a podcast of the cinema. Shut up.
Say it again.
No.
Say the podcast of the cinema again.
A podcast of the cinema.
How's your tea?
It's gross.
How's your tea, Dave White?
I don't know how you drink this all the time, Dave White, because it's nasty.
I told you when your throat got all irritated and sad that you should start drinking lots of hot liquids. Did you listen to me? No. And now it's worse. But now you're having that tea, ain't you?
Yes, and I'm not enjoying it.
You're soothed now, aren't you?
Do I sound soothed?
I know inside on the cellular level that you're soothed.
To stop trying to take advantage of my not having a voice to like spread lies and misinformation. And fake news. You're Dave White. I'm Alonzo Duralde. This is our show.
If you're listening for the first time, we're both film critics.
That's right.
He's the reviews editor of The Wrap, and he is one of the dudes, well, one of the people on What the Flick, because it's not all dudes.
That's right.
You're one of the people on the Maximum Fun Network new, brand new podcast called Who Shot You?
That is correct.
Also, what else are you? That's it.
That's, yeah.
I'm a film critic. Also, I write for The Wrap sometimes. Sometimes not.
But you have written for many people over the years.
That's true. Mostly I make a lot of dinners.
And you do this program.
Also, this program is a full-time job, whether it sounds like it or not. As unprofessional as we may be, a lot of work going on.
That's
behind
right.
The scenes here.
This doesn't just happen.
Guess what? Sick person with the bad voice.
What's that, Dave White?
Guess how many movies opened this weekend?
Basically, Thor Ragnarok and the rest.
Guess how many constitute and the rest?
Well, wide releases. Just Bad Moms Christmas and maybe LBJ?
Sure. But in addition to Thor Ragnarok...
Oh, you mean like how many indies opened this weekend?
15 other movies opened this weekend.
Dang.
In big cities of the United States.
Right.
And some...
streaming platforms.
Yes. 16 total films opened this weekend.
'Tis the season.
We're going to talk about like two of them... that we've both seen. You saw one I didn't see. I saw one you didn't see. And then there's a special thing that we are going to remind you exists.
But I was going to say, a periodic appearance
we'll,
of a...
We'll
of
get a, to that in a minute.
Of a very sporadic fixture of this program.
It was going to be a more regular one, but you know what?
Who has time?
We're often disorganized.
Also, I just want to tell everybody, I saw and loved Lady Bird, and I reviewed it at The Wrap, if you were dying to know what I think about it. Dave's going to see it this week. We're going to talk about it next week.
Yes.
I have more voice than I did that time I went on Canceled Too Soon to talk about the Muppets.
Oh, really?
That's not saying much, but yes.
Well, Thor Ragnarok.
Yes.
I still don't understand what is a Ragnarok.
In the comics, and I guess in Norse mythology.
I mean, I just finished watching this movie.
And you still don't know.
And I still don't get what is the Ragnarok.
Ragnarok is basically Armageddon.
Oh.
It's the end of everything.
Oh, that again.
Yes. They somehow managed to do it in the comics at least twice, so go figure.
Well, they managed to do it in these Marvel movies every Marvel movie.
Just about.
They're always staving off the end of everything.
True.
Oh, so that's what the Ragnarok is.
Yes.
I thought it was a dance.
I do the Ragnarok.
I thought it was a dance. Like when they're having the Hulk like disco dance party in the streets.
Oh, right.
In this movie. Sorry, spoiler.
Everybody knows Hulk is in this movie. That's not a spoiler.
No, but no one knows that there's the Festival of Hulk where people are discoing around in the streets.
I suppose, yes.
With big Hulk signs and things.
Right.
But I just told them about that. You can send hate mail to me at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. I didn't ruin anything.
No.
Because guess what happens in this movie? Thor, punch, punch, punch. Hulk, punch, punch, punch. Kate Blanchett does this. Well.
Jeff Goldblum.
And Jeff Goldblum does this. Well. Like there was a secret meeting between Kate Blanchett and Jeff Goldblum to see who could out campy queen each other.
Yeah.
And
who could out arch each other both as a verb and an adjective.
They are together the most delightful pairing of human beings in a movie.
They're like when
of this year.
They're like when Milton Berle and Ethel Merman played Louis the Lilac and Lola Lasagna on the old Batman show. Like, I think they were actually watching clips.
So this one is directed by
Taika Waititi.
Taika Waititi. Oh, God. I trip over his name every single time I try to say it. And I don't know why. Because it's not like it's in a foreign language.
Well, he's Maori. So
I get it. I know. But, you know, still, in New Zealand, they speak English. And so,
are you just embarrassed about saying Titi?
No. I'm not.
Okay.
I'm just, I get tripped up over the repetition of the sounds, I think.
Ah.
Yeah.
Well, you're dumb.
Some have said.
Mm.
So, they capture Thor. The bad people capture Thor. They make him fight the Hulk. Then they fight back.
In a nutshell.
That's what happens.
Meanwhile, Kate Blanchett is taking over Asgard, and Tessa Thompson is the Valkyrie.
No new ground is broken in terms of what's happening in this world of where the Avengers are.
Probably little somethings.
This is a side story.
Nothing
about
major.
About a Thor adventure. Yeah. Where he had to punch, punch, punch. And Hulk had to go punch, punch, punch. And now Tessa Thompson also
gets to go punch, punch,
punch, punch, punch.
But it's very funny.
It's really funny.
Yeah.
I laughed consistently from start to finish, more so than I have laughed at either Guardians of the Galaxy film. Yeah.
It's definitely better than the second one.
Yes.
I'd have to rewatch the first Guardians, and I don't see that happening anytime soon, to judge.
As a person who does not care one bit,
right,
about the world of the Marvel movies.
You didn't mind there wasn't more Infinity Stones in this one?
Don't care. I don't care. Like, here, as a person who doesn't care, I found this to be a refreshing diversion.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to a serious trudge toward meaning. I know that in the past, the Captain America movies have been about serious subjects.
Right.
And have taken themselves very seriously. I love those Captain America movies. But there comes a moment when you can only 9/11 the audience over the head so many times. Are we not being real here? Superhero movies are about the aftermath of 9/11.
Well, yes.
That is what they are
about. In the large scale. Yes. And yes. I'd say, I'm only giving Captain America a break just because Man of Steel was so dead on about its 9/11-ness with the collapsing buildings and the people covered in ash. I was like, okay, yeah, we get it, Zack Snyder. Like, this has been the subtext all along, but you just texted it.
Of all of them.
Yeah.
And so these funnier, goofier ones, they're like a nice breather.
They're a tonic.
Yeah. I don't know what Marvel is doing as an entity,
mm-hmm.
if they want this level of stylistic diversion, what do you think they're going for?
In the broad scale?
In the broad sense.
I think that they don't necessarily want it to always be the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, at some point, I suppose, Captain America is going to meet Groot, you know. But
right.
for the time being, I think his movies are going to be maybe a little heavier than the Guardians movies are. And
yeah.
this Thor movie is a lot lighter than the first two Thor movies were.
Yes, absolutely.
I think they're sort of open to the possibility of things being funnier and breezier, but they're not ruling out. I'm sure Black Panther will probably be much more serious than
yes.
Thor Ragnarok was.
I'm guessing. Yeah.
So I think they're allowing themselves a number of tones to play with so that audiences don't get bored and feel like they're seeing the same thing every time. Which, you know, obviously I think DC is probably moving in that direction as well, since Wonder Woman was very un-Snydery compared to, like, Suicide Squad and Batman vs. Superman and Man of
right.
Steel.
Right.
I don't know.
I'm sure
if we wanted to go back and, like, you know, Bibbs seems to be interviewing Kevin Feige every couple of months, you know, if you really want to know what's going on, I'm sure he's finding out. I just go see him when they come out. I don't read about them. I don't really care. I don't even know what wave or phase or whatever we're in at this point. 3, 4, I don't even know.
Are there phases and waves?
Oh, yeah.
There are?
There was phase one that ended with the Avengers. And then phase two...
Ended with the Avengers?
Yeah.
Can you rewind and talk to me like I'm a five-year-old so I understand what the hell you're saying?
I'm saying that this is sort of an ongoing saga, obviously.
Right.
But it's broken down within to sort of sub-stories. So, like, all of the first movies are about introducing the heroes and Nick Fury finding them and then bringing them all together in the Avengers. And then, so that's sort of the end of phase one. And then when phase two starts, it's moving on to something else that culminates with, I'm not sure what. And then eventually we're getting like two Infinity Wars movies. And so I'm sure that will end up whatever phase that is. So
we're in the second phase.
Maybe the third. I'm not sure.
You don't even know.
I don't.
Why don't you?
I said at the beginning, I don't even know what phase.
You grew up
we're in.
With this stuff. You're supposed to know all about it.
But this is different.
Do I have to get Bibbs over here?
Okay, you might. This is not directly based on comics. I mean, the characters are. The characters are, and a lot of the story elements are, but it's not like they're following a set pattern.
Oh, okay. I had no idea. Listen, between these films.
You don't think about these films.
I don't think about these films.
And for the most part, neither do I.
I erase everything I knew. I rely on the films to come to get me back up to speed. Like, Loki shows up at the beginning of this movie, and I was like, okay, I think Loki's real cool. Who is he again? Like, how is he connected to Thor? And then at some point in the dialogue, someone else asks that question.
Yes.
And Chris Hemsworth says, my brother. And I'm like, oh, that's right. Loki is his brother.
See, yeah, they're smart about their exposition.
I am so content to live outside of this world when I'm not in this world.
Right.
In the theater. I almost always enjoy my time with these characters, with these films. Because to me, they mean next to nothing, unless they are trying to mean something, and then I write about them as the objects they are and the meaning they are meant to convey, and then I forget about them again.
Fair
so
enough.
As serious-minded as the Captain America films often are, and I take them seriously when I'm watching them, and if I'm writing about them, I do the same thing. But when I'm done, I'm like, hands washed. You guys go back and make another one, and I'll just forget you exist, and I won't think about you, and I won't watch your trailers, and we're going to have a great relationship that way.
Well, and that's what I think is...
No strings attached fun.
That's what I think is so great about Thor Ragnarok, is that if you have been super following and invested in this story, it does give you the things you want. And if you haven't, it's just like purely entertaining. And so you don't have to remember that Thor and Loki are brothers. You know, whatever you need to know, they'll remind you. And beyond that, even if you're walking in, I think if you'd never seen a Marvel movie and you walked into this one, you could still have fun with it.
Absolutely. Because you wouldn't have to know much.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm really into that Tessa Thompson.
She's great.
I am also, again, just to reiterate, down for Kate Blanchett and Jeff Goldblum as these wacky queer people.
There's a lot of Blanchett does a lot of posing.
Oh, and, yeah. Yeah. She strikes curious poses, as a matter of fact.
In my review, I said that she was she was Diana Rigg doing Joan Crawford and Eve Arden, because sometimes she's just withering and sometimes she's being like, she's sort of firing off these, you know, one-liners.
Yeah.
She's something else.
I'm very into her. Does she get her own film sometime? Mm-hmm. You know.
I don't think we've seen the last of her in the MCU.
Oh, if they're smart, no. Yeah. No.
Because Loki actually was supposed to die.
Here's the thing. Anybody can die in these movies. I'm not saying who does, who lives and who dies in this film, but anybody can die in these movies and they just come back.
As I was about to say before you interrupted me.
That's what I do best.
Loki was supposed to be dead at the end of one of these movies.
That's right.
And the audiences were like, no, we like Loki a lot. So
bring him back. Right. Let them all have another Hulk disco party in the streets.
There you go.
That should be a whole movie.
Hulk Disco Party.
Hulk, that should be the name. Hulk Disco Party. I would watch it.
Chris Hemsworth is, you know, I think hopefully this is the movie where we finally take him seriously as a comic actor. Because I thought he was really funny in Ghostbusters.
Yep.
And he's had moments of flashes of wit in the other Thor and Avengers movies. But in this one, he's hysterical.
He's quite funny in this movie.
Yeah.
And what was he just in that you wrote that he was...
This.
Oh, because the you
wrote this like a month ago. Yeah.
You reviewed this about a month ago. That's why it seems like a long time ago to me. Yeah, he's our new Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah. Yeah, because like he is this exaggerated, insane sex symbol, but funny about it and in on the joke.
Right.
Of his own ludicrous perfection.
The way that Marilyn Monroe and Jane Mansfield were consistently playing gorgeous people who weren't always the smartest.
Right.
But they knew what they were doing.
Exactly.
They were in on that. They cultivated that image. That was their character.
Yeah, they played with
and
it.
And so that's what he does now.
Yeah.
In a way that I hope we take, if not seriously... I told we take it appreciatively,
yes,
I hope.
He gets his props.
Because if he were just to be another stone-faced leading man action hero,
mm-hmm.
we would get bored with him very quickly, and he would eventually wind up in these Hallmark Christmas movies.
Well, it's interesting because, like, we had that period of, like, your Sam Worthingtons and your whatevers. Yeah. But, right now, we seem to have, like these dudes with crazy bodies, but also senses of humor, like all the Chris's. Pine.
How many are there?
Hemsworth, Pine, and
Pratt. Pratt was a comedy guy first,
right? Exactly.
He didn't have the crazy body first either.
No, I know, but I'm just saying. I think like when you look at these dudes now who are sort of, you know, running the table, they are all. None of them are stone-faced about it. Like they're all kind of like, they can take it seriously if they need to, but they can also acknowledge this is ridiculous.
So we like it.
Like weirdly enough, John Krasinski is turning into a beefy leading man who doesn't have a sense of humor.
Right.
He's somebody who started out funny, and
then he grew a beard and started and was in the Benghazi movie, and then that's it.
Yeah, and now he's just always grim. I think he's doing like the Jack Ryan reboot on Amazon or whatever. Yeah. And it's like,
well, they need someone like that,
right?
They need him to be that guy.
I guess I liked the Jack Ryan movie with Chris Pine, but it didn't go anywhere.
Nobody cares.
No one cared. Did you? Do you even remember it?
I don't know what that was. I know I saw it.
It was like Jack Ryan's Shadow Recruit or something.
I don't remember the title. It was
It was Kenneth Branagh actually who did the first Thor movie. Yeah. It was a prequel about sort of like his first big case or whatever.
Yeah. No, I know. I saw it. I couldn't tell you a damn thing about it.
I just remember they were in Europe, but I remember liking it. I remember having fun with it. But
there,
it tanked.
There are. There is a. I've talked about this so many times. There is a condition that afflicts film critics.
Oh, yeah, no, I totally.
I'm sure there are some of them with perfect recall. Bibbs seems to have a brain for facts and details that is almost frightening to me sometimes because he says, oh, yeah, and this was this and this was that and that was that person did that and this was in this year. And it was like he's built for the schmodown. And
yeah, I thought I had an okay ability of that until I went on the schmodown.
And I will watch a film, write about it, process it, talk about it on a podcast or two, and then it's gone. And I have to go back and look at it again, read the review I wrote, look it up on IMDb, ask you what the title was.
Who was
even in it?
I have gone back and read reviews of movies. I'm like, Did I see that?
Look, I wrote that review.
I have no memory.
I don't remember
writing
memory.
This. I don't remember seeing it. I don't remember any of it.
Nothing. It evacuates the dance floor. Fully. Okay. Bad Mom's Christmas. How do we want to go about this? Do we want to hear my side of the story or yours? What would you like? You decide if we're going to talk about that it's crap or that it's good, first or last. Make a decision.
I honestly don't care.
All right. This movie sucks. Bad Moms Christmas is the sequel to Bad Moms. And someone said, what if Bad Moms but Christmas? And someone else said, money. And then someone else said, yes. And then they made a movie without a script. Put all the bad moms in a place. It's Christmas time. Bring all the bad moms into town for Christmas time. And then methodically go from bad mom plus mom and their trouble to another bad mom plus mom and their trouble to the third bad mom plus mom and their trouble. And then antics. And then fighting, and then sad, and then Christmas. Ta-da! There's one more thing. There's like a 6-year-old kid in the movie who says, oh my effing God, at least 5 times. So it's rated R, you guys, for wacky child profanity. Like, of a sort that many people will find irreverent enough that they'll leave the theater when the child spits that out 5 times in a row.
It was in the Red Band trailer.
Yeah.
I love how, because this movie got made fairly quickly, this idea that, like, oh, it's this naked cash grab. It's a sequel. It's a studio movie. Of course it's a naked cash grab. That's what most of them are.
Great.
I don't know why we're suddenly clutching our pearls about this.
Tell me, I'm not clutching any pearls. You just say your piece.
I laughed.
Yeah.
I laughed consistently.
When did you laugh?
I laughed. I've told you about this. I laughed.
Oh, you didn't. Your laughter wasn't reserved for one particular cast member? Like mine was?
It was not solely for Christine Baranski, who does steal the movie.
She stomps through every scene being legitimately funny. Every time I laughed while watching Bad Moms Christmas was because Christine Baranski was on screen being evil.
She's the best thing in the movie, but yeah. I also laughed at a lot of the Catherine Hahn stuff. I thought as much as I thought that Cheryl Hines was probably the most wasted in the film, mm-hmm. I did like the therapy scenes with...
Kristen Bell?
No, the Wanda Sykes. Wanda Sykes. Blanking on her name for some reason.
Yeah.
I thought those scenes were funny. I laughed from start to finish. It wasn't like brilliant, and it wasn't, you know, it's not great, but it, you know, a lot of times when we talk about comedies, we say like, I laughed enough or I didn't laugh enough. Right. I laughed enough.
I
obviously it's a Christmas movie and I'm a famously soft touch in that department. And I especially like dysfunctional family. Christmas movies are probably my favorite sub genre. No. So, but I had a good time. I laughed. I laughed enough. I'm not going to defend it as being a great piece of filmmaking or structure or any of that stuff. I laughed enough.
Christine Baranski, the end. This is such clunky, labored, sluggish filmmaking with a script that is held together with like spittle, and it has no relationship to any real life that I've ever witnessed. And it ditches the premise of the first film almost entirely, in that these alleged bad moms are actually super women who construct Christmas scenarios for their families that are straight out of a magazine, pretty much. And only when the hyperactively perfect Christine Baranski comes in do you see any kind of, oh, well, mine is better sort of situation. And so what you're getting in this movie, if I may be a little darker about it,
okay,
is a thing where if you even remotely think that this is what that these characters are what moms do, you're setting everyone up in the world to fail, because they're already great at being moms. Now, Catherine Hahn's character, no,
right,
she's the actual bad mom who has been allowed to remain a bad mom. In this film,
I think that there is something weirdly aspirational about the bad moms, in that, yes, they do make it seemingly effortless to put together what would be like an upgrade for most people as far as like, yeah, their Christmas and stuff. And then they have to bring in other characters to make it not enough.
Right.
I grant you that.
It's absurd. Mm-hmm.
But I think in the sense of that it's a comedy, and that you want to feel like the character that you're relating to is doing it right, and maybe even if they're doing it better than you,
yeah,
I don't think people make that sure leap.
Well, I was bored out of my mind and couldn't wait for it to be over. Wondered when it would be over. I saw it Friday morning, bright and early, first show of the day at the Arclight. I was with three other people, one old lady, all the way literally on the other edge of the big house, about four rows in front of me, and then two moms who came together and sat on what was the first row of the main chunk of seating.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just the four of us. Though I had my phone on the whole time because I was in the far back.
Right.
No one within even like noticeable range of me. Like I was like half a mile away from everyone else. So I was just texting my friend Will and saying, I can't get wait to get out of here. When is this going to end? It's endless.
I went to the first...
two moms down front.
Mm-hmm.
They were having a blast.
They were hooting
and hollering.
I went to the first show Wednesday morning when it opened at Century City, and there were a total of about 25 people in the theater.
Right.
Half of whom were a group of women that all came together.
Right.
And they were having a blast.
I guess.
And I laughed too. So sorry.
All right.
If this is your first episode, I wrote a book called Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas.
He did.
It's now available at Amazon and wherever books are sold.
Wherever fine books are sold.
Yes, the finest.
It's been available wherever fine books are sold for the past seven years.
Oh!
Speaking of,
yes.
I said the magic number. Guess what we are this week?
This is our seventh anniversary show.
Yeah. We've been doing this show for 7 years now. because your book came out at exactly the time we started this podcast.
Happy anniversary.
Also to you. Have we hit our millionth?
Oh, you know, I haven't checked lately.
You didn't check?
I'll have to look.
Last week we were in urinating range of 1 million downloads.
I'm going to pause. I got to look now. You got me all wondering. Okay, as we're taping this, we are at 996,473 total downloads. But I think by the time this episode goes out, we will cross 1 million.
Wow.
I know.
That's stupid.
I know. I mean, look, I'm sure other shows got here in a week or two.
Right.
It took us 7 years, but whatever. We'll take it. It's exciting.
Mark Maron wakes up and
farts 1 million.
But I mean, okay. Am I proud of us? I guess I am. As for just doing this for so long, maybe.
Yeah.
Other
shows have come and gone in that time.
For growing literally listener by listener
pretty much this time. Yeah.
Because we're still super small potatoes.
Yeah. I mean, but we get the occasional boost by something like the time that Chris Lavoy had us on the Stephanie Miller Happy Hour.
Right.
That got us a whole bunch of new listeners.
Yeah.
And I'm sure doing... filling in for Margaret Wappler and Pop Rocket and now doing Who Shot You over at Maximum Fun hopefully has led some people away.
I know that my three appearances on Pop Rocket have brought in one entire listener.
At least.
Definitely one person. They followed my intoxicating opinions right over here and have become devoted.
So we just, you know, we just keep...
I mean, I don't know, maybe.
We keep slowly growing the... thing, yeah. The show.
I'm happy.
Yeah. And of course, thank you to all of our Patreon subscribers at patreon.com.
Oh, yeah. If you're super into us, you can go Patreon us.
Yeah.
It's a subscription situation. You get extra podcasts. You get things. Those things are in the process of being shipped right now, finally, for 2017. Took us enough time to gather up all the materials, but they're all going out in their own boxes.
Yeah. So if you want to hear us talk about television or food or
stupid stuff in life,
provocative topics, there's all those shows.
Watch streaming films with us once a month. That's on an appointment basis.
Mm-hmm.
That happens.
Yeah. Patreon.com/linoleumknife.
Yes. Okay. So you did not, neither one of us saw LBJ because it looks terrible.
Yes.
But you saw Last Flag
Flying.
Last Flag Flying is what it's called, the new Richard Linklater film.
Correct.
I have not seen it. I'll get around to it.
It's set in 2000.
It's not about baseball players in 1980, and so I'm less inclined. That's it. Everybody wants them.
Oh, God, I was like, what are you talking about?
Come on, dude. Keep up.
My first thought was the Bad News Bears, but anyway.
Right.
Okay, so this is it's set in 2003. Steve Carell plays a veteran whose son has just died in the Gulf War. And before he goes to Arlington for the burial, he tracks down two of his old Marines buddies. One is played by Bryan Cranston. One is played by Lawrence Fishburne. Mm-hmm. This is sort of... it's apparently based on a novel that was a sequel to The Last Detail. But I guess Linklater didn't want to conflate the two films or whatever, so he's changed the character names and stuff and some of the backstory, I think. But essentially, Carell is playing the Randy Quaid role, Cranston is playing the Jack Nicholson role, and Fishburne is playing the other guy who left acting and became a minister.
Right.
And, you know, so it's a road trip, and there's, you know, they're all different now. Like Cranston runs a bar, and Fishburne's character has become a preacher, and you know, they butt up against sort of like army bureaucracy and kind of military doublespeak and whatnot, and it doesn't really work, which really surprises me because I'm a huge Linklater fan, but it. There are like moments that stand out and there are moments where the performances really land, but I don't know, for the most part, it just feels like it's going after this sort of bigger picture about, you know, America and, you know, why we send boys off to die and what stories do we tell ourselves about why we do that and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I just, it ultimately, it, you know, it, it's, it doesn't land. Hmm. It doesn't play like, you know, Cranston, I think is, I think maybe he was trying to be Nicholson at times. He's kind of overdoing it a little.
Oh, I see.
And, yeah, I don't know. I'm like Christy and I reviewed him. We were both like, this movie doesn't work. And we're not quite sure why it doesn't work. We just know it doesn't work.
You're not alone on thinking this about this film. And so I had already decided, we'll get a screener. We'll get the screening DVD at the end of the year and I'll sit down with it then. Cause I love Linklater's films.
Of course.
Well, a lot of them anyway.
I was going to say.
Not all of them. He's not, you know, always
Elizabeth,
knocking them out of the park.
Elizabeth Weitzman did a ranking for us at the Wrap of 20 movies, including You Can't Learn to Plow by Reading Books, which is like the first short that he made before Slacker.
Yeah.
And this documentary that he made about like a baseball coach that I've never seen. Yeah, but yeah, he has made a lot of features.
Yeah.
And yeah, some of them are, you know, Bad News Bears and Fast Food Nation, and some of them are, you know, Boyhood and the Before trilogy.
So back in the, well, what was it, like 3 years ago, two years ago, we had this big idea, you and me.
Oh, do you want to talk about Mabarossi first?
I will, after this is over. Our big idea was we were going to start a new segment on the show called Make Me.
Yes.
We have a stack of DVDs and Blu-rays, and it is a literal stack.
Indeed. We call it Mount Unwatched.
Yes. And I stole that name from someone, but I can't remember now who I stole it from, so I invented
it. It's ours now.
And we always are telling each other, oh, I'm going to sit you down and make you watch this. I'm going to sit you down and make you watch this.
Right. Well, so far, we've each made each other watch one movie.
A grand total of one each. You made me watch Vera Farmiga's directorial debut,
right,
called Higher Ground.
Right, and you made me watch Robert Bresson's O Hazard Balthazar.
That is correct. My favorite film of all time.
Yes.
And then I knew I had you captive on Halloween night.
Right.
Because we don't leave our house on Halloween night.
Nope.
Because our neighborhood is overrun with a couple hundred thousand people partying in the streets.
They don't schedule screenings for Halloween night. And I discovered that even when they schedule them for Halloween afternoon, don't bother because they've already started closing off the streets and traffic is a nightmare.
And you can't get to the place you need to get to.
Yeah, I was trying to see Lady Bird on Halloween and I couldn't. I had to go buy a ticket on Friday morning.
3 o'clock in the afternoon. It was a screening and you couldn't even move.
Yeah.
On the roads. So I knew I had you captive, and we don't get trick-or-treaters because we have a building with a security gate. And those dumb kids don't know the code. So we were home with our candy, and I said, you are going to watch Phantasm. Phantasm the Great!
Is it, though?
Oh, yeah, it is. What did you think of it? Because everyone knows it's great, but what did you think of it?
I was kind of bored at times.
No, you weren't.
Here's the thing.
You're wrong.
By the end of the film, I realized that, and sorry to spoil a movie that's 35 years old. It's, you know, the whole thing is like, what's a dream and what isn't a dream?
Yeah.
And to pull that off, you have to sort of set some groundwork as to what reality is and isn't. This movie.
Do you?
Well, this movie starts off like such a sort of like oddball, low budget horror movie that you're already kind of going, is this happening because it's a dream or is this happening just because this is a dumb movie that doesn't understand how the world is? So then when they try and play with that, I was kind of like, oh, okay, so that part before that seemed ridiculous, that was supposed to be real, and now we're in, like, cloud cuckoo land. And so, there are some very memorable moments. I understand why this movie is iconic, and I haven't seen any of the sequels, but, I was just kind of not super into a lot of it.
There are so many. I'm sorry that you don't understand the beauty of Phantasm, because there are so many incredible, visually memorable moments, and such a wonderful air of creepiness, and that approaching horror approaching you in a way that feels slow but inexorable. It Follows seemed to steal quite a bit of its vibe, I think, from Phantasm.
Hmm.
And the what it's about is a kid who is being tormented by someone who is only known as the Tall Man.
Who runs a cemetery.
Runs a cemetery and robs graves. But in what it really is it's a nightmare. It's what it feels like to be inside a nightmare. And it doesn't make sense. And the rules don't work from time to time. You think, well, wait, what? I just got away from him then, but how come he's right around the corner from me now? And now there's a flying stabby ball coming at my forehead. And, you know, it's so cool. It is so wonderful and so weird and beautiful in its $5.26 kind of way. Because that's about how much it costs to make.
Right. No, I like I said, I see what the appeal is. There are some memorable moments.
Yeah.
I think you might have prepped me for it a little better. You didn't really tell me anything, and so
that's why.
I see.
Well, yeah. I wanted you to experience it like I experienced it at the Roswell Park Twin Theater in 1979.
But see, I think seeing it in 1979 and seeing it now are two totally different things.
Nope. Still right. Great.
Fine.
I made you.
You did.
Well, now you can make me.
And I will.
Pick something.
I hope no.
And it'll happen. This will be the fourth make me. Yes. And then it will become a real regular feature whenever we feel like we have time.
Exactly. That's about it.
I also went to the Hammer.
Yes.
With some pals. Art House Matt.
Yes.
Young Robbie. Gary Cotty. We went to the Hammer to see the Hammer Museum to see Hirokazu Koreeda's Mabarossi.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Mabarossi was his first feature, his first narrative.
Narrative feature.
Feature. He'd been in some documentaries before. His first narrative feature back in 1995. This film is out of print on DVD. Mm. It's available if you want to spend some cash on it. If you have a VHS player, you can get a VHS copy for like $2. It's about a woman whose husband mysteriously dies. And by mysteriously, I don't mean that the circumstances are mysteriously. He's run over by a train. But the reason he's run over by a train is because he's walking on the tracks directly into the path of the train.
Mm.
And no one can explain why he did that. No one knows why he did that. No one knows if he wasn't thinking clearly or if he was trying to commit suicide. There was no indication that he might be trying to kill himself, nothing. So she spends the film grieving. And even after she allows herself to be placed into an arranged situation by a matchmaker with another widower, she's a widow with a child mm-hmm. now from this first marriage, she's placed in a marriage with a man who is a widower who also has a child. And they get married. They move to a small coastal village where there are some wacky local characters.
Mm-hmm.
And they're pretty happy together, but she's still grieving the loss of the first husband and is always sort of living with the aftermath of that grief.
Right.
And the new husband is trying to help her through it. You know, he's got his own grieving to do. But it is really a film about sitting with grief. And what you do with it, and the questions you ask yourself, and the questions you ask of the dead person who will never answer you. And it's shot in such a way as to make her feel and look very small. It's shot in big, wide, gorgeous. Gosh, it's so beautiful to look at.
Like anamorphic.
Yeah, so much gorgeous cinematography. But placing her in the frame and not pushing for anything cathartic, not pushing toward anything overly intimate or overly emotional, it doesn't make you, no pun intended, it doesn't make you feel anything. But you will, because it's so perfectly controlled and so very still, you have no choice but to sit there with her in her grief. It's magnificent. It's beautiful. If you can see it, somehow, somewhere, Acropolis Films, this group of people that now brings new and old films to Los Angeles repertory screens, they brought it to the Hammer. And Corrieta was there doing a Q&A after the film. I didn't stay because I hate Q&As. But, yeah. And then for the lowbrow element of the evening, we ate dinner at Denny's. There's a Denny's right across the street from the Hammer Museum.
Right.
There are so many really good places to eat around the Hammer.
Yes. Like posh restaurants.
Like nice places to eat.
Tablecloth-y kind of places.
And then also sort of like new, cool, fast, casual kind of places to eat.
Mm. And you went to Denny's.
But here's the thing. Sometimes you just get a craving. You got to get the thing you need to get. And I'll say that Denny's pot roast, which sounds like the last thing you'd want to order at Denny's, is their secret MVP on the menu.
Really?
If you're a meat eater, every time I go to Denny's at a non-breakfast hour, I'm on that pot roast.
Mm.
And when I say every time I go to Denny's, that means the one time a year or one time every 2 years that I wind up in a Denny's.
When I'm in a Denny's, it's always breakfast time, no matter what time of day it is.
That's how memorable this pot roast is, because they used to serve it, and it's just basic pot roast, but it's falling apart. It's so tender. And they used to serve it just on a bed of mashed potatoes,
mm-hmm.
but they have managed to up their pot roast game, because now they serve it on a bed of mashed potatoes, which in turn is on top of two big pieces of garlic toast.
Ooh.
I'm telling you.
If you want this level of ridiculous food discourse,
no.
Check
this
out
is not ridiculous.
Knife and fork.
This is not ridiculous food discourse. This is, I'm giving you advice.
Okay, fine.
I'm telling you a thing. Do you eat meat? Are you not scared of Denny's? Get that pot roast at Denny's.
All right, what's your DVD pick?
Phantasm.
Oh, well, yeah.
Phantasm. Halloween's over, but it's always time for horror, and they've just come out with a 5-disc set.
They've remastered the whole thing.
All the Phantasm movies in one case, and it's cheap, too.
Yeah. Mine is Olivier Assayas's Personal Shopper, which is now out from the Criterion Collection. We're bearing down toward the end of the year. And it's going to be a very competitive year for actresses. There's just so much great stuff out there right now. And I worry that in the same way that Kate Beckinsale was overlooked last year for Love and Friendship because it came out early in the year, that people are going to forget about Kristen Stewart in Personal Shopper because it came out earlier this year. But she gives an extraordinary performance as a young woman who is sort of literally haunted by the memory of her dead brother and who is also a personal shopper. It's a real great movie. If you haven't seen it, you should check it out.
Here's a letter from Wilson. When discussing It, y'all revisited the topic of jump scares, and Dave again somewhat smugly affirmed his precognition of and practiced immunity to jump scares, particularly compared to the relative squirms of Dr. Duralde. I don't get what is this superior position. From my point of view, Dave is actively denying himself the pleasure of some good adrenaline hits. Being startled is part of the fun of horror movies. There is an actual biological rush to being startled. This is presumably part of the physiological fun of being scared. I understand the difference between being startled and being scared, and how well a film accomplishes either is a different analysis, even if you believe that the former is a cheap trick when a director cannot accomplish the latter. That is what I think most of the time, just FYI. But with regard to jump scares, Dave Braggadocio seems unfounded, as it appears to say, "Ha ha, I had less fun than you." By not being susceptible to the jump scares, I would argue that one gets less out of the experience for the entertainment dollar and time. Personally, I don't like horror films, as I perceive them as a genre, but I do love a good creepy story. I prefer bold over blood, and am scared more by existential terrors than a machete-wielding masked man at a summer camp. I never saw the Babadook, but what I can tell from internet memes is it's about a gay chimney sweep. I was very much looking forward to The Others, but was told how unbelievably scary it was so many times before seeing it that I steeled myself throughout the entire film and was not only never remotely scared or even uneasy, I braced myself so much I never got to immerse myself and enjoy what turned out to be a pretty good, exactly what I like, old-fashioned ghost story while I was watching it, and I can never see it again for the first time. Is it the prideful denial of jump scares, some sort of lingering bro insecurity akin to you didn't get me in a cinematic game of made you flinch? I like to figure out a good mystery before the reveal. Is this similar? Do you feel as if you were in competition with the filmmaker? Do you somehow win if you don't jump during a horror movie? If so, what's the point? Do you also win if you don't cry at beaches? What sort of heartless monster are you?
Yeah, Dave, why don't you like fun?
Okay, so I did not cry at beaches. I did not cry at beaches because that movie is some jive BS. That's the first thing.
I probably cried at beaches.
No, here's the thing. I'll tell you exactly what it is. I love horror movies. And when I was younger and hadn't seen a lot of them yet, I would jump, lickety-split, jump and scream and squeal and yelp and whoo, you know? But then I saw a lot of them. And I learned to watch the film in the way that they're often made, which is lazily.
So you're jaded.
I'm jaded. And so when I'm taken by surprise, when a movie makes me jump scare legitimately, I'm like, ooh, you got me, movie. It Follows did that to me. It Follows took me by surprise, and I got jump scared like two or three times during that film. And I kept it, I held on to it, and I loved it. But most of the time, I just don't respond to jump scares because... Silence. Blah! Like, that's what the movies do. They do this constantly, all the time. And so...
You've kind of taught me to see them coming.
And yeah, I in turn have said to you, look, watch. Beat. Here it comes. And then it comes.
Yeah.
And I don't like that I've become that person. So sorry if I sounded like I was bragging. I'm really actually complaining.
Because they're not trying hard enough.
Because they're not trying hard enough. They're not trying to get me. They're not being clever enough to get me. I want the movie to be clever enough to get me. I want It Follows. I want people to get as inventive as they can get and make me jump. Because I like jumping.
Fair enough.
I like jumping as much as Chris Cross likes jumping. I'll have you know, Wilson. But yeah, no, I don't think of it as a pride or anything. I just think of it as like I'm bored now. Mm. I'm bored and I wish they would stop boring me with their boringness and their by the numbers lazy filmmaking.
Simpsons did it.
Yeah, I want to jump. I do want to jump. Anyway. All
right.
That's what's up. Thank you, Wilson. I like a letter that really
calls you out.
Comes for me. Don't everybody start writing letters that come for me. God. Be nice. It's Christmas. M.A. Ross. Here are a few tough films to watch for your bear-ish friends. Here they are, not in any particular order. I don't know why are we...
I don't know what that's a reference to.
Okay, well, anyway. L.I.E. by Michael Cuesta. Well, yeah, that's
I think these are all tough sits no matter who you are.
Yeah, L.I.E. is a... It's not easy. Vulgar by Brian Johnson. I haven't seen that
one. I have.
What is it? I don't even know what that is.
It's a monstrously tasteless film about a clown.
Okay.
It's, yeah.
I'll look it up. Requiem for a Dream. Which
is just ridiculous.
I just thought it was silly. And it's never been.
But it's trying to be dark.
Yeah. A Stranger by the Lake, absolutely.
Ooh, yeah.
And if you've seen the latest from that director, Staying Vertical. It's equally weird and difficult. Bully by Larry Clark.
Yeah,
that's also a
Yeah, I think you don't have to be who was this for? Bears?
He said bears, but yeah, I don't know why.
These are
why,
just disturbing films in
why
general.
Why bears in particular would be Mr. Steve, Dr. Steve Scott. On Monday, October 2nd, I got to turn off the news and listen to 4 straight hours of Linoleum Knife and Fork, Linoleum Nights, LKTV, and Linoleum Knife. Thank you for the break. Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Steve Scott for being a subscriber that gets to hear all those, all 4. Well, you don't have to subscribe to get this one.
Well, you can subscribe on iTunes.
You got to subscribe. Well, you subscribe on iTunes, but it's free.
Yeah.
And then here's a 1, 2. Oh, look. Reviews. Opera Junkie says, if you're not listening, this is iTunes reviews?
Yes.
Opera Junkie says, if you're not listening to the lush vocal delivery and hilarious insights of these 2 incredible guys, then you simply are beyond help. Dave and Alonzo are simultaneously... okay, sure.
I'm not lush this week, but, you know, thank you.
Dave and Alonzo are simultaneously casual and formal. Their delightful banter, punctuated with mentions of Godard and Bresson and Almodovar. Listening to this podcast is like wrapping yourself in a soft blanket and watching your favorite movie with a glass of wine. So apparently we have made him drunk.
All right.
Thank you, Opera Drunkie. Sarzem from Switzerland. Hosted by the married couple Alonzo Duralde and Dave White, this podcast is informative, funny, and not always about movies. Digressions may include cooking stories, anecdotes from their personal life, and political commentaries. Yeah, that's accurate.
Yeah.
Thank you for those 5-star reviews.
Thank you, gentlemen.
And then this is another one from Dr. Steve Scott. 2 things regarding Blade Runner. On a scale of 0 to Sigourney, how would you rate...
I think you missed some of that.
In The Defenders.
Yes.
How would you rate the coat game in Blade Runner 25? Blade Runner 2049.
There are some okay coats.
I'd maybe give it a 7.
Mackenzie What's-Her-Face has a pretty good one.
They came out strong with the future hoodie worn by the evil fembot, but I think it dropped off after that. Excluding Golden Age movies, what other films would you say rate a high score for their coat game? The Party Girl?
Oh, totally, yes.
The Age of Adeline?
Yeah.
Desk Set?
Yeah, that's true. That's got some good ones. A movie I hate, but it's set in a wintry post-apocalyptic wasteland. Robert Altman's Quintet has some severe coatage going on.
Number 2, why does Blade Runner's world objectify women's bodies so much? And never hot himbots, damn it. Is it a comment on the objectification of women, or is it an artifact of so much science fiction, fantasy, and comics being written by sexually stunted hetero nerd boys for sexually stunted hetero nerd boys?
Yes.
I think you probably are right about that. Here's the thing. I have to go in and actively think about that when I'm watching films like this because, you know, I'm queer. Alonzo is too, hence we are married to each other. And so sometimes when I just see a pretty lady in a movie, I think, oh, look, a pretty lady. I like looking at pretty ladies. And it's not...
We're so used to being ignored in these movies that it's more noticeable when they actually do make the effort than when they don't.
Right. And so,
you know, Jude Law in AI.
I wish I had a better answer for you. Yeah, when you do get to see a man's body being subjected to the same
gaze
scrutiny, then I notice it. And then I think, oh, wait, they've been doing that to the women this entire...
Chris Hemsworth and Thor Ragnarok.
Like Chris Hemsworth, yeah. I wish I had a better answer for you than that.
I mean, yeah, I suspect...
I always feel so kind of locked out of that.
I suspect it has a lot to do with the people who are making the movie, but also that they are reflecting the world that we live in, which is that, you know, drive down any street and thumb through any book stand and you're
right.
10 times more likely to see objectified women as objectified men.
Correct. So anyway, those are the letters.
All right. Since I'm nearly out of voice, I'm not going to do my usual spiel.
Just do your thing and save your voice. Stop talking for the rest of the day.
Shut up and let me finish.
I'll love it when you stop talking for the rest of the day.
Subscribe to us on iTunes. It's free. Leave us 5-star reviews like Opera Junkie and the Swiss person who are awesome. You can also leave us positive feedback in all the places that we stream like Stitcher Radio or thelounge.com or Google Play, CastBox, Podbean, iVooks. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at LinoleumCast. Drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com with questions or comments. We're going to try and get caught up with letters for the end of the year. And I guess that's it. All right. Thank you all for listening. We'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.